Welcome to Juno Afternoon from listener-supported KTOO, broadcasting from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. On today's show, we feature those involved with the upcoming Point House benefit concerts to assist in the revitalization, re-envisioning, and rebuilding of a Sitka clan house for the 21st century. It was recently listed on the National Trust for Historic Preservation's list of America's 11 most endangered historic places. We talk with the land's steward, Jericho Blang, as well as hear music and conversation from the musicians involved in the benefit concerts, Portugal the Man, Yatsin, and Samantha Crane. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Toeksik Newsom, Salamat, thank you for joining the conversation. To begin, let's take a listen to this beautiful anthem of endurance and vision for the future of Indigenous peoples from Samantha Crane. This is titled, When We Remain. That was Samantha Crane with her song When We Remain, sung in her Choctaw language, a perfect way to begin today's program. We had the opportunity in mid-December 2024 to gather and talk with everyone involved with the upcoming Point House benefit concerts. They are scheduled for January 31st in Juneau and February 1st in Sitka and feature Portugal the Man, Yatsin, and Samantha Crane. We begin the conversation with steward of Point House, Jericho Blang, laying the foundation of what Point House is, and Lakota Hardin talking about the beginning of how this concert came to be.
Well, it's my matrilineal heritage. My Tlingit name is Hlutin. I am Kiksadi of the Point House in Sitka, Alaska. And quite a few years ago, somebody in our community referenced that the land that was across the street from our house used to be my people's land. And I took it with a grain of salt at the time, but it got me going down a rabbit hole of why she thought that land belonged to me or our people, more importantly, and quickly realized that that was the place that our clan house had last existed, the last iteration of our clan house. So it got me going down a path of trying to figure out, well, who owns that land? Why do they own that land? What would land back mean? At the time, I hadn't even conceptualized land back. And so I did some due diligence and research to find out who owned the property, and thus began the process of repatriating that property back to our people. And in doing so, I really didn't have a platform or a model for what a land back method could look like for a clan. And so when we started the process of the land transfer, I realized that there was a large responsibility that came with land back. We don't just heal when we're given the land back. There's an action that needs to happen. It needs to occur on the property. So inevitably, I had to do research, and I had to say, well, what is a clan house? What's the basis of a clan house? I know that I identify as being from that house, but that physical structure isn't there. So I had to get to the nuts and bolts of what it is that I was going to do with the land, and I thought collectively rebuilding a clan house was the most appropriate action for that property. I spent some time after repatriating the land kind of drilling out the narrative to myself. I worked really hard, and this year we were able to be on National Trust's 11 Most Endangered Historic Places. And as opposed to writing a nomination for the individual property, I looked at the Sitka Indian Village, or what used to be called the ranch, as a whole. And I wrote the narrative of why it was important culturally to me, to my people, and why it was worth preserving. And that made me put pen to paper, which I'm not good at. It took some time for me to really suss out what it was that I wanted people to understand about my property. And it was very competitive, and I was surprised that we won because I was nervous. But it was wonderful because there was no prize associated with it. The prize was really the acknowledgement of the hard work that we have to move forward in. And we also got the Alaska Association's Historic Preservation's 10 Most Endangered Alaskan Sites as well in the same year. So that's what really spurred me to start the process of getting my own nonprofit started, looking at grantors, and putting this project forward. Lakota is a good friend of ours, and she grew up on the island. And when I refer to the island is Chaponsky Island in Sitka. She's part of Sitka's culture, and she's been alongside my family. I worked with her sister. And so when I was really serious about starting fundraising, I brought this project to her and said, I have some interest in doing this. And in 2018, I attended Coachella, or Baychella, as I called it. And I saw Portugal the Man, and I knew that they were from Alaska. And I heard their land acknowledgments. I knew Lakota was working with them. And I said, if I align myself with artists, it has to be with people who understand what I'm doing and understand the message and that those messages align. So I reached out to Pass the Mic Foundation, which is Portugal's nonprofit, and just said, this is what I'm doing. This is who I am. Let me introduce myself. And it kind of came at a pivotal time. My dear friend Chuck Miller, who was the leader of the Kayashka Hit, which is the only functioning clan house in Sitka right now. When he passed away, he is a clan brother to Nicholas. And that brought us together in a way that it felt organic to say, this is the time that I really need to start pushing preservation because it's crucial now. I had lost somebody who was my mentor. And when I brought this to Nicholas, it just seemed like all the stars aligned for everything. So really, Lakota and Nicholas were, I think, the catalyst for getting this pushed over the line. And I had seen Samantha during Ock Rock here in Juneau, and I had actually reached out to her prior to all of this, and Nicholas can attest that I really wanted to work with her as well because she had sung a song about land, and I was like, gosh, she would be perfect for this. And lo and behold, somebody got a hold of her, and we added her to the tour last minute, not as an oversight because we wanted her here the whole time, but that's kind of the nuts and bolts of how I reached out to them through their foundation.
Lakota, can you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
An adopted Desitan raised by a Kagwantan man here in Sitka. my sister, who Jarek referred to, passed on 2 years ago this week. And when that happened, I realized how precious our time is, how valuable our place on this earth is. And I decided to set aside my income-driven life, you know, working the 9-to-5, and I put out to the energy into the earth, you know, I need to do something more. And that answer to that prayer, to that quest, I womanifested, got an email from John Gourley. And I'm very grateful because Portugal the Man, I had met them before in 2019, previous to the pandemic, and learned their history. I love their music. I've always been a music lover, so that's really what got me here. But their commitment to our people, to this earth, showed me that they listened to their ancestors and said, we have to make things right. And not only for Indigenous people, but for everybody, for our whole world community. And their music is very healing. It was an honor to be able to travel with them and to be a part of their family and to witness what life on the road is like, but also meeting many Native people, Indigenous people all across the country, having that opportunity. And we all are in the same mind of realizing that John Gourley is, in Lakota language, we call it Heoka, but in each tribe, I'm sure we have that name for that special person who thinks in a different way that some of us can't even understand, but he's got this vision for the healing of the planet. And he's very humble. He would never say that about himself. So that's why I'm saying it, but we're blessed and honored to have him and be on the planet at the same time as him. And I adopted him. I feel like he's adopted all of us. He's taking care of Indian community wherever he goes. So when this project came up, of course I knew that he would want to help with this because every time he hears about anything, his first response is, you know, how he can help. And so we're really grateful for that. So that's how I've been involved.
I'm going to go back to you, Jarek, for a moment in terms of this idea. What does being a steward of the land mean to you?
It means a lot of things. And Lakota really hit on it, is that time is precious. I have this window of time, and I don't know how long it is, but I have this methodology behind what I'm doing that I need to leave things better than they were. And so with the time that I'm allotted, I think that stewardship for me means doing the best of my abilities in the time frame that I have. So my work has been really centered around just trying to make the property better, make it feel collectively owned. I want a space that people walk into and recognize their heritage and identity and say, this belongs to me. This is who I am. I didn't have that growing up. And I feel like a lot of my personal life is putting pieces back together, that whether that be boarding schools, whether that be Presbyterian colonialism, whether that be Russian impact, there's so many pieces I have to pick up and put back together. And Nicholas has found this wonderful community in art, and although I appreciate art visually and sound, I don't think I'll ever be part of that zeitgeist. I don't think that I'm an artist. But I'm methodical about putting this thing back together. This to me is like the Library of Alexandria. This is where our crests are held. This is where our songs are held. This is where our language is practiced. This is where ceremony takes place. Those are the things that I want to keep intact. And the timing is right. The timing is crucial. The timing is now. So, that's what stewardship looks like for me right now.
We are talking about the Point House Benefit Concerts, the Thlinkit Ani Tour 2025, two cities. It's going to be in Juneau on Friday, January 31st, and then in Sitka on Saturday, February 1st. It's called Hit Wushte Yadu Kicht, and it's Dancing Our House Together. It's a benefit concert for Point House. You can find out more at pointhouse.org. We'll take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk to the artists involved in the benefit concert. But first, let's take a listen to Feel It Still by Portugal the Man.
To keep my hands on myself, Hansen Gress, ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakaya ha ani kak gunish cheesh.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Now back to more of our conversation with the artists from the Point House Benefit Concerts. We talk with Nicholas Galanin from Yatsin, John Gurley from Portugal the Man, and singer-songwriter Samantha Crane. I want to turn to Yaith Yatsin, Nicholas Galanin. Nicholas, will you introduce yourself? And I know you grew up in Sitka. Can you speak to a little bit about clan houses and what it means for the community?
Thank you all for that. Yaith Yatsin, Yuha Duasat, Tluknahari Hatsati, Kagwantan Yadi Ayacha Shika Kwan, Yaith Yatsin, Nicholas Galanin, Raven Koho, Children of the Kagwantan, born and based in Sitka, Sitka, Alaska. Yeah, it's just good to see you all. Good to hear you all speak. And I feel like what Jarek is speaking to in this work is one aspect that ties us all together, the same that art, song, music, ceremony, land, all of these things, I think it's all part of it. So I feel like the thoroughness of colonization was first to remove things like language and children, and to remove our access to, you know, things that we still work towards today, like for our, I hate the word subsistence. I think it's more sustenance and abundance. So I would speak to it in that terms instead of subsistence. But, you know, to remove our access to those things. Fast forward to capitalism and trying to survive, let alone trying to maintain culture and all of these during this space. We're here in 2024. We have one community clan house that was fairly significant and kind of was a special for the time that it went up. I forget what year it went up. It was in the 90s. I worked on the screen. I was an apprentice carving the screen with my uncle Will Burkhart, and that served kind of one purpose for the whole entire community, in a sense, is a community house and not necessarily a clan house with each of our own clans having say in what we're doing. So I feel like this work is overdue. It's the next step, and I feel like if it's, you know, with the success and learning and all the things that go into it, we can take this to each clan and strengthen all of our communities.
And I'm curious for you, John, can you tell us a little bit, you know, introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about where you're from, because I know you're from up north, South Central. Give us a little background on yourself.
Yeah, so I'm John Gourley. I grew up around the Kinnick area, so I'm a Valley kid. But my parents were dog sled mushers. and had gotten their first team from the Reddingtons. And we ended up moving around quite a bit, lived in Trapper Creek, up in Healy, outside of Fairbanks, kind of just all over the state. We traveled a lot for those dog sled races. Parents ran like the Yukon Quest. We'd fly out with them and get stuck in those blizzards, those little tiny planes. And it's been fun looking back at a lot of that stuff recently with my mom. I remember my mom, we were flying behind my dad and on the Yukon Quest, just following along. And we got stuck in this blizzard and it was so much fun for us as kids. I asked my mom about it recently. I said, "Hey, you remember that crazy plane ride we had?" My mom was acting like she was having a blast the whole time. She was so terrified. I remember seeing like trees going by us. We just grew up in mushing community. But yeah, mostly a valley kid, I guess.
Lakota was speaking to your ingrained feeling of community, and your foundation, Pass the Mic, or PTM, is an outgrowth of that. How did you gain that sense of community growing up?
Good family, I suppose. I mean, that's all I had. We didn't really have neighbors growing up. And I think when you're in that, I mean, just the mushing community is so small. We didn't have a lot of people around us growing up. And there was a lot of care for the people around us. And my crew looks a lot like my dad's crew growing up, the type of people my dad would hire. And so it's a lot of people that need work or need help, need something, always trying to like help people out. And I always really respected that about both of my parents. I mean, I watched my mom out there. We didn't have power either, so we have a generator. And I watched my mom out there in the middle of winter, it's 20 below, fixing our generator. And us kids are like, when's it going to be fixed? I want to watch some cartoons. You know, again, it's looking back on it and saying, oh my God, my mom was doing so much for us. And I think it's a lot of giving back to them and the people around us that we did get to see. There was a lot of love and I guess a lot of hardship around those communities as well that we saw. I felt really privileged to be with my family. We would take in people a lot growing up. I mean, my mom took in foster kids and always had people in and out of our house. It was something I always really loved.
You know, I feel like in Southeast Alaska, the sense of the indigenous community is really top of mind. And there's a lot of history, at least maybe because I live here, I don't know. I did grow up in Anchorage, but I didn't feel as much a sense of that. What kind of sense did you have on that, John, as you were growing up out there in the valley, in terms of the indigenous community and sort of the relationship to the land?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with the Reddingtons. I mean, Brian Reddington just passed through Portland just a few weeks ago, and he called me up and came by the house, and we hung out a bit. I imagine it's mushing community. I mean, I can't even, I wouldn't say I really pinpoint anything. I would just say that there was, I mean, I could tell you a quick anecdote. My dad, growing up, we never went hunting. And it was just something we never did. All of my friends went hunting. They always hunted with their families. And it was something that I always felt like I was missing out on. He taught me how to shoot. I carried guns from a young age, as most Alaskans do. I just knew how to use them. This one day, I'm about 10 years old, and we're sitting at the dinner table, and this moose walks by the window. As they do in the middle of winter, moose walks by. And my dad looks at me and he says, "Hey, Johnny, you want to go hunting?" And I'm looking at it like, oh my God, we're going to do it. We're going to do the thing that all my friends do. He goes, "Go get your snowsuit. I'll go get my gun." And I go and get my snowsuit on and I'm getting all ready. I'm really nervous. I mean, this moose is huge. My dad's there, ready to go. We go out, and we find where the moose was headed. And so we track it down. And we get right up on top of this moose. And we're out in the woods, but we're close. And Alaskans know, like, to be wary of moose. That's the thing that will get you. So we're right up on it. I'm, again, nervous. And my dad says, "Hey, Johnny, you sure you want to get this moose?" And I nod at him. I say, "Yeah." And I'm waiting to see what's going to happen. He points the gun at the moose. And we're sitting there. I'm looking at the moose. Nothing happens. I look back at my dad. He's looking at me. He says, "Hey, Johnny, you sure you want to get the moose?" And I nod at him. I'm a little confused because this moose is right here. And it's they are typically pretty aggressive. And I'm scared as a little kid. I nod again. He's pointing at the moose. Nothing happens. And I hear him kind of adjust. And he looks back at me and he says, "Hey, Johnny, we're not going to get the moose." And he says, "Come on, we're walking back." He says, "Do you know why we're not going to get the moose?" "It's because we don't need it. That right now we can afford food. We can get, we can go pick up food. If you ever need that moose, it'll be here." And it was just something that really stuck with me. I mean, I've learned to shoot. I've gone hunting since, and I've done those things. And I really believe in the land and what's here for us. And I believe in that relationship. I would say that story, that lesson, made a really big impact on me in understanding all the things that we see in Alaska. We see smaller salmon runs. And we see less moose in the valley. But learning to not take it if you don't need it. You know, you only take what you need. But yeah, I would trace it back to all of that. It's just family.
That's a good lesson. I really appreciate that. We'll take a break. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We'll be back with more on the Point House Benefit Concerts. Hit Wushde Yadu Kicht, Dancing Our House Together. You can find out more at pointhouse.org. Let's listen to a sample of the collaboration between Portugal the Man and Yahtzeen called Knives. I'm Boston Christopher. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. Now let's continue our conversation with the artists from the Point House Benefit Concerts happening at the end of January 31st in Juno and February 1st in Sitka. For more information, you can go to pointhouse.org. Samantha Crane, hi. Will you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you?
Sa host Chifoyet Samantha Crane, Shawnee, Oklahoma, Amitili, Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma, Indian Territory, Amitili, Choctaw Sia. My name is Samantha Crane. I'm from Oklahoma. I'm a musician. I've been writing songs and releasing records and touring for, I guess, the better part of like 17, 18 years now. The way that I'm kind of like connected in with this, I guess, Jarek, the song that he was mentioning that he had heard me sing, I think in Juneau, was a song called When We Remain, which is a song that I'd written in my Choctaw language. And it was sort of a tribute to this land that I had grown up on in southeastern Oklahoma, near Clayton, Oklahoma, which is like the, you know, the heart of the Choctaw Nation, the reservation down there. And I think the sort of the thread between what Jarek is shepherding and where I was coming from with my song is that there's physical places where people within these communities gather, but the culture and traditions and values that are instilled like within the walls of or the boundaries of these physical places, that's like the real marrow of the people that are there. In my case, like my extended Choctaw family on this acreage in southeastern Oklahoma, that like me and my extended family and my all my cousins grew up on, we were at this physical place, this this land that like our ancestors were brought to at the end of the Trail of Tears. So it was like this new land that they had to take time and communicate with and listen to in order to survive. And they spent like seven generations, you know, weaving themselves. That's like one of the lyrics in the song is like weaving themselves in with the land. 'Cause that to me, I think speaks to like the reciprocal relationship between a person and the land and all of the living beings around them. Like what John was saying with this story about the moose, you know, it's like that there's like a reciprocal relationship between the person and this moose. And it's like, if you don't need the moose at that time, then you don't take it. And if the moose knows that you need it, then he's there. And then you will give something else like to take that place. And so that relationship with the land that, you know, it guides the values and traditions and the culture, and also the values and culture guides like your relationship with the land as well. And that's what I was learning as a child when I was like walking through these forests and fields and like meeting all of the living beings around me, understanding like how we participate at like the participation and the intimacy with like the oak and the hickory and the mussels in the river and the woodpecker. And like, I don't have access to that land anymore as it was sold off. And I do realize the importance of having the physical place to sort of like re-impart our culture, and also like for younger generations to not just learn about their culture, but really have it and hold it. And like, I think it's important to have that physical place to really like soak in those principles. They go hand in hand. And so because I have like a similar road ahead of me in finding ways to sort of revitalize my community's relationship with our traditional lands, like what Jarek is doing, I'm like nowhere near as far down the road, but it's something that I've recently started thinking a lot about and seeing what things that I can do to give my time and support to that. And so when Jarek told me about this, I really wanted to be able to like support his community's journey towards the revitalization of the Point House. So that's sort of where I come in with this. You know, it's like I didn't grow up in this area, but I have like a parallel story in my own way, like from where I'm at.
Which brings us to a good sort of segue here to talk about the music and this concert that's going to be happening. Nick, you have been working on collaboration with so many different areas of your life, because I know you're a carver, you're also an artist, you've been doing these museum installations recently. I've been following that on your Instagram, which is fantastic to see. Can you just talk a little bit about collaboration before you go and how what that means to you to collaborate with artists like Samantha and John?
Yeah, I love it. There's an alchemy that happens in the process that you can never arrive to alone. There's unknown, there's trust, there's willingness and generosity. There's so many things. This record that's just being finished now, 2 years in, I kind of had a moment of mourning the process because it was so enjoyable, the process of discovery and process of taking risks and chances creatively, meeting and working with new artists, etc. So that's my favorite place to be. It is fun to perform and feel the energy and all of those things, but purely creative standpoint, my favorite moments are in the studio with peers.
Gunath Cheesh, Nicholas, I know you're on a residency in Uruguay and have to go, but Gunath Cheesh for taking the time. We'll take a short break. This is Juno Afternoon from KTOO.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
And now back to our interview with the artists from the Point House Benefit Concerts happening in Juno on January 31st and Sitka on February 1st. More at pointhouse.org. The conversation continues with John Gourley and Samantha Crane sharing about their work and what they would ask of each other as songwriters. Samantha, I wanted to ask you about Dragonfly, and the lyrics of that song are so freeing, right? A little bit. And can you tell me a little bit about the songwriting process of creating something like Dragonfly?
I think at the time, it was summer. There's lots of dragonflies that are in this field that I always walk my dog in. And I was just observing them day after day after day. And they're so amazing. They fly like in, you know, six different directions, and they're iridescent, and so they appear differently depending on like how the light is hitting them, and they're only really like active for a short time, like in their life. They're usually just these like immature little. I don't know the correct like biological term for it, but like a pupa or something. And they just have this like one moment that they're building up to for this like flight, this great coming moment of flight. And it just sort of like symbolized the kind of person that I would want to be, which is like sort of slow to get to the point, I think. Like flexible and resilient, like in this like world that is just all over the place and ever changing and that you don't have control over, but sort of like just living moment to moment towards this, like, and kind of keeping to yourself towards this like one potential moment of like wisdom, I guess, or in their case, like flight. And I think it just sort of felt like a way to talk about like seeing beyond the limitations of like the physical self or like, or your ego, like what it is that you're thinking about day to day that like you need to do in order to be like yourself. I think it's just sort of, yeah, I mean, it was just sort of like an ode to like how sophisticated I kind of found the dragonfly to be. And that's really all it is, which is so funny because there's so few words in that song, really.
It's a jam, though. I'm telling you, it's a jam. It's pretty
great.
Yeah,
I mean, I just wanted it to have like a good, you know, walking groove. I love whenever I'm like in a city that I don't know very well and I've got like some headphones on and I can find a song that just makes you feel like you're, you know, the protagonist in a movie, like, you know, when the camera's like following you down the street, like there's a song that just has like a really good walking rhythm to it. And so I spent a lot of time like walking around the studio before we laid that song down so I could make sure that it was going to be a good walking song so we could find the right tempo for it.
John, I wanted to ask you, I know your last album, Chris Black Changed My Life, had a bunch of songs on it. I'm thinking about playing the song Times of Fantasy. I know that there's a lot going on with your daughter, Frances, and you've been very open about the GoFundMe for that, and your partner has kept people updated on what's going on with Frances. I know she connected to that song. Can you just talk maybe a little bit about Times of Fantasy as a song and how you came to write that song and then maybe the connection with Frances on that song?
Well, first I want to say, Samantha, I love that you walk around the studio and think about a song that is good for walking because I do the same thing. Like, I think about, like, how does this visually look when you're writing music? That's kind of my favorite part of making music, is thinking of the action that goes with it. There's something. With Times of Fantasy, it's kind of difficult to go into all of it. Obviously, there's a lot going on with our daughter. Our daughter has a rare disease. It's extremely rare. It's nano rare. So she's one of like seven kids with her specific mutation. It's called DHTDS. And then I think there's like 70 or 80 of the larger group. And there's probably more that it's just genetics are advancing so much that they're being able to, they're more capable of pinpointing what is going on with these kids. Her disease has like, it's like Parkinson's isms and Alzheimer's, dementia. She has issues processing sugars. So Times of Fantasy, we wrote that song the night, it was a really heavy night. We had just really dug in on all the research around DHDDS, and there's very little. So it felt really bleak, and we were just writing this. Yeah, I had the lyrics there, and I had them already, and it was a really long night, and a lot of emotions writing that song. But when it came back home, Frances just, it's the funniest song for her to be so into and want to sing along with, because it feels so emotional. And she is just, the end of the song is, I got a feeling things are going to be just fine. And Frances just really loved singing that line. She kept singing it when I was listening to the demo, and we ended up just bringing her into the studio and saying, hey, you want to sing this? And I love that, like, I get to hear her voice, like, her little voice is, like, popping out in that song. You can hear it really clearly, especially knowing Frances. And I find that stuff so interesting, like, what kids gravitate towards, and that she is such a big part of that song.
Yeah, like you said, it's interesting because the connection to that song in terms of, I was just looking at some of the lyrics and like, immortality is the ghost that haunts, like, you don't even know me. You know, sticking together, we'll be together forever with the ghost that haunts all the things you don't owe me. There's a lot in that song, and to have her connect with that is kind of fascinating.
Yeah, it was really interesting because it is talking about mortality and fears the future, and there's nobody to really ask. You know, and nobody owes us anything.
Which, well, I do want to mention.
Love that she loves it.
Yeah, I want to mention that if people want to find out more, there is a GoFundMe, and it's you can search Frances Changed My Life, and you can find out a little bit more about what's going on with John's daughter. That was a clip from Times of Fantasy by Portugal the Man. For more information on John and his daughter, you can search GoFundMe for Frances Changed My Life. And now back to our conversation and our final question for John Gourley and Samantha Crane. I'm just curious if there was a question that either of you had, and this will be the last question, if you had for another songwriter, like your two songwriters right here, what would you ask of each other in terms about songwriting? Is there something that you would want to know from Portugal the Man or from Samantha Crane about songwriting?
I mean, so you do something that I'm really not great at. And I love that. How do you go into that place to write from experience? So, I mean, seemingly like effortlessly. You know, that's always like the feeling I have when I listen to like singer songwriters and you did nail it perfectly. Like honesty is everything. And yeah, I would love to hear more about your approach on that.
I don't know. I guess it's just what always occurred to me. I think like I came to music as somebody who, it's probably interesting because I think we had probably pretty similar childhoods in that it seems like you spent maybe a lot of time alone, like, or just sort of like not having like a lot of neighbors or friends around and things like that. And that was definitely how I grew up, which was just like, my parents both worked sun up to sundown. And so me and my brother were just sort of left to art. We were very free range sort of kids, probably from a much earlier age than what would even be acceptable in 2024. And so because I never had people around me that I felt were listening to me or understood me, my first response to like learning about writing songs was that all of the things that nobody ever took the time to ask me about or check up on me or, you know, ask me how my life was going or all of that, I could put these into a song and go to an open mic and people would listen to me talk about my experience. And so that was just, I mean, that's just my first intuition on what to do when it comes to like writing a song. As I've gotten older and done this longer, I've definitely dabbled in the writing other people's experience into songs. And I learn a lot from that, but I would just say my first instinct is to write my own experience. So it's interesting. If your sort of first gut reaction to writing songs is to maybe write from another's point of view or from a character or something like that, like how does that come from the same, how do those two branches come from the same trunk? I don't know. I think, yeah, I would have the same question for you. How does that come about so easily? I feel like I would really have to try hard to think of a character to write from, unless it was like an inspired conversation that I see, then it just like comes back to myself. I think I'm just really self-involved. And so that's like why my natural instinct is to be like, well, you know, this happened to me, so I'm going to write about it. But I mean, yeah, I think the question that you have for me is also my question for you. That sort of idea of having a character to write from or go on stage as sort of someone else has always seemed so cool to me, but it just seems so unnatural to me. I don't have a theatrical bone in my body, I don't think. So
See, this is like fascinating to me. I love learning about why people write, and that makes so much sense. And I've never heard anybody put it in that way. So I really appreciate you sharing that. I think for myself, I introverted, I sit in the corner wherever I go. Like I could be at like a a fun party, and I like just watching people, and I like thinking about that experience, and I love watching people have fun or just experience life. And I wonder what that must be like, because I don't have that same like need in me. I mean, I love that we're all different, and I'm one of those people that likes to just sit back and watch everybody dance, and I have a really good time doing that. I really like thinking about what they're doing. I think a lot of it probably comes from like the really nerdy place where it's like, oh man, I should have said that in the conversation. I get nervous in conversation. I don't like being the center of attention, even in like this conversation. There's two people looking at me right now. Those are things that are difficult for me. So it's easier for me to write post experience and take it in and process it and put it down. But I would say that my most successful song is one of the most honest that I've written. So that honesty and that experience it's very potent. As you said, like you could play it for 30 people, you can play it for 3,000, and it's always going to be the honest thing that cuts through.
Wow. It's just been an amazing conversation. John Gourley, Samantha Crane, Yaith Yatsin, Nicholas Galanin, and Lakota Hardin, Jarek Hope Lang, thank you so much for being part of this conversation. It's all part of the Think It Ani Tour 2025 for the Point House Benefit Concert. It's going to be in Juneau on Friday, January 31st. And then they're going to fly right over to Sitka and the 20-minute flight or whatever it is, and then they're going to perform there on Saturday, February 1st. And for all the information on it, you can go to pointhouse.org. There's tickets to the benefit concert. There's also information on Point House and, as Jarek explained earlier in the program. Really appreciate you all taking this extra time today to be part of the conversation. I could geek out and talk more about songwriting for a couple more hours. There's so much there, and I love having artists who can get together and talk about the way they do it, because as you said, John, everybody does it a little differently, but then in the end, it's all kind of the same. Like, it's a community. We've been talking about community today, and it is a community, and everybody has their individuality inside that community, and that's the beauty of this expression that you all give to us in song. And so we really, really appreciate you and your artistry, and we look forward to being at the concert and checking you all out. And hopefully you'll find ways to collaborate on stage that night, since you've all worked together in various different capacities. Samantha, John, you guys haven't done a song together. Maybe we need to make that happen.
I think we do.
Sounds good, though.
I think that's something you can be talking about that weekend while you're up here. So, but really, thank you so much for taking the time. I really appreciate it. Gunath Jeesh for being here today.
Thanks, guys.
Hachiki Salachiki.
Yeah, thank you, guys.